Chapter 16. Honoring the Dead. My time in New Guinea was always action-packed, especially over the Christmas holidays of 1966. My mother and I flew back into Kundiawa after an intense 5-day foot patrol south of Karamui with Kiap Mike Baker. We were both exhausted from our extraordinary adventure and very keen to get back home. On our return, we heard that the wake for big man Kondoma Guendo was to be held the next day at Wandi, a small hamlet, half an hour by road, west of Kundiawa. All the European expatriates from Kundiawa had been invited, and those that were able, planned to attend to pay their respects. Guendo had died 3 months earlier, in a shocking motor vehicle accident. The accident had occurred on the unsealed Highlands Highway, whilst climbing the precipitous Dalo Pass, on his way home to Wandi. It had been raining heavily, and his vehicle slid off the edge of the road into a deep ravine. Miraculously, his driver survived. His wake took his family months to organize, and still the shock of Aguandoa's death was reverberating through the Simbu district. As the day of the wake approached, community concern intensified, wondering what would happen at the gathering. As a result, my mother and I had little time to debrief or share our Karamui patrol stories with friends. That would have to wait until after the wake. Next morning, I had no idea what to expect as we piled into various vehicles for the short drive to Wandi. When we arrived, we were greeted by an unbelievable sight. The football field was swarming with hundreds of people, milling around mounds of food, laid out in long rows, each mound staked and named. The mounds were made up of partly cooked pig pieces, as well as sweet potato, freshly harvested vegetables, and fruit. To our surprise, there was a steak with my mother's name on it. Below the steak were two small pineapples. She was touched to be included in this serious sorry business ritual. After slowly walking up and down between the rows of food, I climbed the low hill that overlooked this extraordinary scene. From my vantage point, I could see Aguandoa's substantial concrete grave, surrounded by a group of women, loudly bewailing their loss. The formalities of the day were punctuated by numerous highly regarded orators from various clan groups and the district officer from Kundiawa, all speaking respectfully of Aguandoa's contribution to the people of Simbu District and beyond. After the speeches, we collected our pineapples and returned to Kundiawa with our traveling companions, all of whom had been profoundly moved by the wake experience. The next task to be tackled was the preparation and planning for the wool project uplift. After almost 2 years in Kundiawa, during which time the spinning and weaving enterprise had grown like Topsy, a unanimous decision was taken to move the wool project headquarters to Goroka, 5 minutes flying time from Kundiawa. As I recall, the reason given was that the project had outgrown Kundiawa's Category B grass airstrip, which was occasionally, due to weather, deemed unsuitable for bigger aircraft delivering larger quantities of raw fleece and yarn, whereas Goroka was a hub airport, boasting a sealed, all-weather Category I airstrip, making it much easier to bring weaving materials in and then out again, to supply the 26 wool project units, scattered throughout the highlands. Moving day arrived. A Caribou aircraft had been chosen for the job, the only commercial Caribou in Papua and New Guinea at the time. The weavers had all the wool project gear, plus my mother's personal effects, alongside the runway, awaiting the Caribou's arrival. After landing, it was quickly unloaded before the wool project gear, and our boxed household effects were carried into the belly of the aircraft and secured. The last item to be loaded was my mother's precious Karman Gear 1500S, which was carefully driven up the rear loading ramps into the aircraft and strapped down. Then it was our turn. We walked up the ramp, my mother carrying her surprisingly calm Siamese cat, and took our seats between the cockpit and the mountain of cargo. This event was watched by an audience of prisoners and others, who would probably never again see an uplift of this kind. Then it was up and away. Bound for Goroka. As we took off, I turned my head to see the back door of the Caribou slowly closing. Through the gap, I was able to watch the Kundiawa township disappearing below us, as we headed east. It was a weird experience, and a little sad to farewell the township that had been our home for some years, knowing full well it was unlikely I'd ever return. But there was no time for nostalgia. That would come later. The next phase of the wool project had begun. The wool project's new home was at the Goroka showground, where a substantial circular building, made from bush materials, had been constructed in preparation for the move. Load by load, the disassembled looms, yarn, fleece, and associated equipment were trucked from the airstrip to the new building, and before long the looms were reassembled, materials stored, and order established. Next, it was time to focus on doing likewise in my mother's newly allocated two-bedroom house, conveniently located not far from the showground. The house, which was standard government employee accommodation, comprised an unfenced fibro building on metal stumps, with banks of clear glass louvers above hip height. Hardwood steps led up onto an open deck, and the front door, that faced the unceiled street. The house layout comprised a combined central living and dining space, with two bedrooms off to one side, with the kitchen and bathroom off to the other. The garden was surrounded by an odd assortment of established trees and bushes that hugged the boundary of the property, no doubt planted by the previous occupants. It wasn't long before we had our living space, ship-shape and welcoming. We were now ready to start again. Settling into the rhythms of life in Goroka was relatively easy for us, because, before moving in from Kundiawa, we had visited occasionally to see friends and for shopping, as Goroka was a larger town. Here, there was a chemist and a grocery store for tinned food, clothing, and freezer, the term used for frozen meat or fish all imported from down south. Availability was one thing, but price was another, as everything, other than fresh fruit and vegetables, came into Goroka either by plane or truck. We were a captive market. Just like Kundiawa, there was an abundant supply of fresh fruit and vegetables. In townships all across Papua and New Guinea, Saturday was the biggest market day. At the Goroka market, huge quantities of all kinds of freshly harvested food were brought in by the local women, to sell to each other and expatriates like us. We could buy carrots, corn, pineapple, pawpaw, oranges, bananas, pumpkin, sweet potato, taro, tomatoes, cabbage, sugarcane, beans, peanuts and whatever else was in season. As a result, for all the years we lived in New Guinea, the Saturday morning shopping ritual was an unmissable event. As expected, it didn't take us long to fully embrace the rhythms of life in Goroka, particularly the more diverse social life on offer, thanks to a larger population of expatriates. But in late January, my action-packed Christmas holiday came to an end, as it was time for me to return to Australia once more. With a degree of reluctance, I flew out of Goroka bound for Sydney, to begin my second year at the National Art School. But I knew for sure I'd be back. The unsophisticated, but exciting life we were living in the highlands of New Guinea, had become part of my being. On reflection. Kondo Maguandoa's Wake. In the years since attending Aguandoa's Wake, I've occasionally reflected upon the sequence of events that enabled me to be part of this extraordinary gathering. As a young white woman in a country where whites were often objects of curiosity, as well as resentment, to be invited to the wake was acknowledgement of the regard in which my mother's wool project was held by Aguandoa's clan and the wider Simbu community. Aguandoa supported the introduction of new ventures like the wool project because he realized that the acquisition of spinning and weaving skills would offer his people another point of entry into the cash economy. He already had runs on the board. He had been instrumental in the introduction of coffee growing in Simbu. He could see the possibilities. So, on his recommendation, the people planted coffee trees. The beans were then sold and processed by the Kundiawa Coffee Factory, a cooperative set up by Aguandoa for the benefit of the Simbu people. Moving the wool project to Goroka. All these years later, I realized the move to Goroka was a cost-cutting exercise. During its first 2 years, the wool project had exceeded all growth expectations. As the result of my mother's single-minded commitment, and the Department of Trade and Industry's unwavering support, 26 units had been established throughout the Highlands, and the associated freight costs were enormous. Before the move, materials were flown into Goroka, unloaded and reloaded into a small aircraft bound for Kundiawa, where, on arrival, they were sorted and distributed. Often materials were flown back to Goroka, to then be flown out to isolated units with no road access. So it made complete sense to move the wool project into Goroka to reduce freight costs. The move certainly had advantages for me. At that time there was a glut of young, interesting, unattached men in Goroka offering me a larger pool of male companions from which to choose, always under my mother's watchful eye, as she was determined to safeguard my virtue. I don't think she ever realized that I always led with my sexuality, in a futile attempt to receive love. Facts. Kondo Maguindo was mourned by thousands of people, both locals and expatriates. Years after the accident, the man who was driving the vehicle in which Aguindo was killed, paid his family a considerable sum of money in reparations, the traditional tribal practice of seeking forgiveness. Although Aguindo had received no formal education, and was illiterate, he was one of the few big men whose influence extended far beyond his immediate locality. He's remembered by the Simbu people as the man who introduced coffee as a cash crop to the Highlands, and was also active in business and local government. He was also remembered as an advocate for the Simbu people. On his watch, roads, bridges, airstrips, schools and clinics were built throughout the province. Decades after his passing, he is still revered as a peacemaker and a great man. In 1982, the Simbu Provincial Building was erected in Kundiawa and named Kondo Maguindo House in his honor. Growing coffee in the New Guinea Highlands. Coffee is a seasonal cash crop that was becoming more widely grown throughout the highlands in the late 1960s. Today, coffee is the highest foreign exchange earner for Papua New Guinea, the majority of which is grown in both the eastern and western highland provinces, as well as Simbu. The industry isn't built on a colonial plantation-based system. Instead, production is largely by small farmers, with land holdings, that grow as little as 20 trees in a plot. The plots are called coffee gardens, and stand alongside subsistence crops. The crop is mostly certified as organic coffee.